So again, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's model is everything we do is with muted simcha. Just you understand that there are many other takanos of what we call zecha lechurban that we'll get to. For example, in Yerushalayim, there are many to this day who are makbid not to have any kind of live music except for a drum. So it's interesting. Now again, so understand that's a practice that's been in Yerushalayim for 2,000 plus years. So it's quite dramatic. So this is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's entire life hashkafa. We cannot live in aninos. We have to figure out a way to move on. But to forget about the Churban is unconscionable. Which if you think about it, what I find amazing about this whole episode is this really kind of sums up the essence of a Jew. What is a Jew? What is a Jew? A Jew is someone who has incredible optimism, incredible hope, and incredible simcha, while at the same time often carries around a heart that is broken, that is filled with so much sadness, that feels the collective pain of Am Yisrael's suffering. And we have perfected, as a people, we have perfected this ability to live in those two spots simultaneously. If you think about it, we are always in a state of mourning for the Beis HaMikdash. That is a perpetual, ongoing state that never changes, it's never lifted. The only time it will change is when Mashiach comes. But until that point in time, that's the life we live in. That's the world we live in. Yet, it doesn't stop us from being besimcha. It doesn't stop us from celebrating simchas. It doesn't stop us from hope, from optimism, from dreaming, all these different things. This, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, this is the koach of the Jew, to be able to simultaneously live in these two places. So where does Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai get this idea from? So take a look. First of all, interesting, we didn't finish off in number 9. If you just look at the last part, look at the last couple of lines here. So, Shene Emar, I'm in number 9, 2, 4, 5 lines up from the bottom. Shene Emar, Im Eshkachich Yerushalayim, Tishkach Yemini, Tidbak Lishoni Lechiki. See here, he's quoting the pasuk from Tehillim. Im Eshkachich Yerushalayim, Tishkach Yemini. If I forget Yerushalayim, I forget my right arm, which is David HaMelech. Obviously, David HaMelech wrote this prophetically. David HaMelech lived before the Beis HaMikdash, but he understands benevuah that the Beis HaMikdash will be destroyed, and then he says that even when it's destroyed, our job is to try to figure out how to remember. Our job is to try to figure out how never to forget. So interestingly enough, he says, what's another? My al rosh simchasi. So the Gemara says, so what is the meaning of the, what do you mean al rosh simchasi? Literally translated, al rosh simchasi means what? On the head. Now, the truth is, really, what David HaMelech wrote, Arosh Simchasi, what was he saying? At the height, excellent. At the pinnacle, or at the zenith of our Simcha. That's why, I'll tell you something interesting. So, it was just mentioned before about the breaking of the glass under the chuppah. The breaking of a glass at a wedding, as I mentioned before, Tosfos in Brachos already brings this down way before the Churban. Where did this come from? Where did this process come from? The Gemara spoke about that there were certain Tanaic weddings that got a little too labadig. Rav was there. Rav did not like the behavior of the Talmidei Chachamim. So what did he do? He shattered a glass. Now what happens when you shatter a glass? What happens when you're somewhere and the glass breaks? What happens? Everyone stops. Rav did it because the wedding was getting a little bit too out of hand. So he smashed a glass. The Minhag Yisrael came from that afterwards to smash a glass at a wedding to go ahead and make sure that the avira of the wedding remains bikedusha betara. After the Churban Beis HaMikdash, that practice was moved to the Chuppah and then took on an additional symbolism of Zecha LeChurban. Now you understand, why is it done at the Chuppah? Oh, because amazingly enough, although there is an ongoing obligation to remember the Churban, the halachic obligation exists most acutely when? At the pinnacle or at the zenith of Simcha. For a Chassan and Kala, what is the highest moment of Simcha? When? That moment of their chuppah. And not when they get to the chuppah, but when they're officially, so to speak, married. Not so to speak, when they're officially married. After they're married, their husband is standing under that chuppah, right about to go out and begin their new life together. That's Rosh Simcha Sam, and therefore they break the glass. I think something interesting, although this is not our topic. So there's another time we break things at a wedding, which is when? By the Tanaim. So that is the parents, right? The parents break, or now the Minhag Yisrael is that the mothers do it, break a plate at the Tanaim. Why? So there's a lot of different symbolisms, but the Talmid Hagim brings down, that's also Zecha LeChurban. We break the plate. Those are zeichel churban. That's parents. That's so the chassan and kala do their zeichel churban under the chuppah. Parents do their zeichel churban at the tanaim. Why? Why do you think it's their rosh simchas sam? This is actually very interesting. Historically, we know that there was often up to a year between Erusin and Nisuin, the two halachic stages of marriage. During that time, families would enter into real financial arrangements with each other. The family of the chassan is going to give 5 head of cattle. The family of the kala is going to give a house. Whatever it is. And they would commit these agreements to writing. Those agreements are called tenaim. Tenaim means conditions. So today, we don't have that level of specificity in marital arrangements. Whatever people agree to, they agree to. We don't usually codify it on paper. That's why if you forgot to do the tenaim at a wedding, you missed the photo opportunity, but the marriage is totally kosher. It's totally fine, because today we do it much more symbolically. But historically, for parents, when did the parental obligation essentially end? When the tenaim were solidified. At that point in time, I've done everything I need to do to bring my child to the point where now they are capable of living a life on their own. What is the greatest simcha for a parent? The greatest simcha? Let me say it differently. What is supposed to be the greatest simcha for a parent? When the child leaves the nest. Sometimes some parents have difficulties with this. But the greatest simcha for a parent is when your child demonstrates that their wings are strong enough and mature enough to take flight. That's the simcha for a parent. That simcha was manifest at the tenaim. So that's the rosh simcha si. So that's the basic pshat in the pasuk. It's Dara Malach is saying you have to remember the churban at the pinnacle of your simcha. Now the Gemara takes a literal understanding. The Gemara says, Amaya rosh simcha si, Amar Rav Yitzchak ze efer makla sheberosh chasanim. So Rav Yitzchak says this refers to the placement of ash on the heads of the chasan. A minhag in Klal Yisrael that we still have to this day. What about ash on the head of the kala? So some things never change. You don't touch the hair of the kala, right? That was true in the times of the Gemara. Apparently it's true still today. So the minhag was never on the... Remember again, the kala has her different zeichel churban. We saw, what's the kala zeichel churban? Remember again, they took away that bas sa'ada, this piece of jewelry, this ornament that the girls used to wear. So that was her zeichel churban, and the chasan has what's called efer makla, the applic, which we still, the minhag Yisrael to this day, to still place ashes on the heads of the on the head of the chasan. And the Gemara says, hecha manachla, where do you put the ash? Bemakom tefillin. On the place where the chasan puts the tefillin, that's where he puts the ash. So good. So this concludes the Gemara. So you have to ask yourself the following question. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is coming along. The Beis Hamikdash has been destroyed. He just had this machlokis with the Prushim. Again, one more time. What's the machlokis in Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and the Prushim? What's the machlokis? Avelos versus Aninos. The Prushim say, we're owning him. Shut down. Everything shuts down. No Beis Hamikdash. Jewish life can't continue. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, of course it has to continue. It'll continue with a broken heart. It'll continue with tears. But it must move forward. We have to learn to live with the loss, not live in the loss. That's the machlokes. Where does Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai get the idea to make these takanos, to make these enactments? So it's based on the pasuk in Tehillim, "Im eshkachech Yerushalayim tishkach imini," which means what? What is David HaMelech telling us? What is he telling us? Don't forget. Human nature is to forget. Forget. You know, and you see this, we're living through this right now, because even if you look at what's happening in our world, so the entire Jewish community was terribly shaken by what happened in Pittsburgh just a week and a half ago, and the truth is, everyone's turning their lives upside down, institutions are turning their lives upside down, everything, but what will happen? What will happen? People move on. People move on. Even when people say, never forget, they'll move on, we see this even, we're less than 100 years away, out of the worst catastrophe that has ever befallen Klal Yisrael, right? The Holocaust. And yet, again, it's already, we see it, as the generation of survivors dies out, it's already seeping out of our consciousness, and it's seeping out of our Judaic consciousness, all the more so you see that historical revisionism is on the rise as well. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai understands that people forget. The problem is, if you forget about the Beis HaMikdash, then what happens? Then what happens? If you forget about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, then what will automatically occur? Or what won't happen? There will be no eager anticipation. There will be no anticipatory pining for the third Beis HaMikdash. In other words, if we forget that we are missing something, then ultimately, again, there is no motivation to daven for a replacement. By the way, we know this today, because here, we have, it's amazing, all so much of the stuff that we do today is from Yochanan ben Zakkai. We're going to discuss it. The list goes on. So, yet, and that's with all the takanos of Zecher l'Chorban, all to remember the Beis HaMikdash. Why? Because if we forget, we're not going to, and yet still today, with all those takanos, it's hard for us. I mean, we all say that we're looking for a Mashiach, we're looking for the third Beis HaMikdash, but the truth is, most times we go through life, life is good, life, you know, even with all, we all have our own challenges, but the truth is, most of us don't go through life feeling that something is actually missing. We don't feel like there's a void, and again, it's not because we're bad people, chassar, we don't care. 2,000 years without something, it's difficult to really feel a yearning for it. Can you imagine, had we not had this framework in halacha called Zecher L'Churban, Beis HaMikdash, I think, would have been long gone. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai understands, we have to remember. In order to remember, you have to build it into the behavioral consciousness of the Jewish people through regulated Judaic practice. So this becomes known as Zecher L'Churban. But now I want to show you something amazing. Take a look at number 11. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was very busy in the aftermath of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. So what happens? The Gemara says, Mishnah says in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, number 11, Yom Tov Rishon Shal Rosh Hashanah Shchalios B'Shabbes B'Mikdash Hayutokin Avalo B'Medina. This is actually a very interesting halacha. When Beis HaMikdash stood, if Rosh Hashanah fell out on the first day, if Rosh Hashanah fell out on Shabbos, so they would blow shofar in the Beis HaMikdash, but yet not outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Mishacharav Beis HaMikdash Hiskin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai Shutokin b'chomakom shiyesh bo beizdin. So interest. So let's take a step back. Why don't we blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah? I'm sorry, that didn't make sense. Why don't we blow the shofar when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos? Good. This is what we call in halacha the gzera dirabba. Rabba's gzera. What was Rabba's gzera? Rabba's gzera, we see in a number of different places. We see it by Purim. We see it by Rosh Hashanah. Namely, any mitzvah performance which requires a utensil. Rabba said, if we don't want you to do it on Shabbos because we're concerned, that Shema ya'avireno dalet amos pesach rosh hasharabim, that you may come to carry it inadvertently in the public domain on Shabbos and transgress. So because that, we don't do it on Shabbos. So interesting. So why did they blow the shofar in the Beis HaMikdash? Why did they blow the shofar in the Beis HaMikdash? Okay, so I could bring the shofar to shul also beforehand. Why not? It's a very important principle. There's a concept of Ein Shvus B'Mikdash, which means rabbinic law does not apply inside the confines of the Beis HaMikdash. The prohibition to blow shofar on Shabbos is a dirabbanan. Dirabbanan cannot legislate on Beis HaMikdash practice. Simple halacha, it applies in many, many, many different areas of halacha. So therefore again, when the Beis HaMikdash stood, they blew shofar on Rosh Hashanah, that was Shabbos, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Hiskin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Shutokin b'chol makom sheyesh bo beis din. What does that mean? Hiskin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Shutokin b'chol makom sheyesh bo beis din. What does that mean? Anyone? It's not a trick question, I promise. Okay, why? What does the presence of the Beis Din have to do with anything? So, okay, maybe because Beis Din's there, they'll make an Erev good. Why else? A simple level, it's supervision. It's supervision. It's just the idea that wherever there's a Beis Din, the hope is that there's a watchful eye over the populace, so that people will be told beforehand, do not carry a shofar on Shabbos. There's a whole historical machlokes afterwards about whether or not it was just in Yavne or was it anywhere where they had a base, where they had a Beis Din. So this was a takan of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. In the aftermath of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, wherever there is a Beis Din, you could blow shofar on Shabbos. Good. Skip down to number 13. Another enactment. The Gemara number 12 tells an amazing story, but we're going to skip it for now. We'll come back to it later on. I want to paint for you the picture. Mishnah and Maseches Rosh Hashanah. Look at 13 Aleph. Barishona haya lulav nitel b'mikdash shiva or b'medina yom echad. So in the beginning, lulav was taken b'mikdash in the Beis HaMikdash 7 days. Ubimedina and outside the Beis HaMikdash 1 day. So first of all, what does this mean? 7 days versus 1 day. 7 days by definition means what? In the Beis HaMikdash, they took the lulav even when? Even on Shabbos. Even on Shabbos. Again, remember, do we take lulav on Shabbos? No, why not? Same issue. Zer d'rabba, shema ya'avireno dala amos b'shesarabim. Same concern. Any time that you have a mitzvah performance which is hinged on an object, we generally don't do it on Shabbos. In the Beis HaMikdash, again, in Shavus B'Mikdash, no rabbinic law in the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore, again, they took the lulav all 7 days. Mishacharav Beis HaMikdash. Now, by the way, when it says that they only took the lulav out, well, let's see. Mishachar Beis HaMikdash, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Hiskin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Shehe Lulav Nital B'Medina Shiva, Zecher L'Mikdash. So what did Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai institute in the aftermath of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash? What did he institute? That's what? Take Lulav all 7 days. Now, of course, all seven doesn't mean all seven. Well, I should say differently. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai originally instituted all seven. Later on, that was modified to mean all six. Now, you have to understand something amazing. We take Lulav how many days out of Sukkot?
Seven.
So you slept through Sukkot? Right, how many days? Six. Right? Six. Which means that to this very day, we follow the takana of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. In the original iteration of Halacha, the lulav was only taken 7 days inside of the Beis HaMikdash and only 1 day outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Which day outside of the Beis HaMikdash? The first day. Excellent. Because again, that's the Doraisva. Kachtem lachem bayom arishon. So 1 day outside, 7 days inside. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, no longer a Beis HaMikdash. We take it 7 days outside. That was modified a little bit later on to mean 6 days, not 7 days. What is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai doing? What is he doing? We now see two examples of this. Shofar and Lulav. What is he doing? He's making us remember Bayantiv. Why Bayantiv? Excellent. So there are two things happening over here. Number one, it is interesting to see. Now, I'll point to something very interesting. So this idea of Yantiv, remember, Sukkis was a mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel. Was there a mitzvah to come to the Beis HaMikdash on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? No, but they were there. It's actually amazing. Historically, we know, the Gemara Maseches Yuma says, that before the sun came up on Yom Kippur, the Azara was already packed from one end to another. We know that historically, Jews went to the Beis HaMikdash on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, even though there was not a pilgrimage obligation. So what's happening over here, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is taking Beis HaMikdash practices, and where is he instituting them? Right? In times of Simcha, and where? Geographically where?
Everywhere.
What you see, what's happening here is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is taking practices that were normally reserved for inside of the Beis HaMikdash, and he's now bringing them out. What is he trying to do? He is trying to build the Beis HaMikdash into our Judaic consciousness. So suddenly now, every single time we perform our mitzvos, there's an element of the Beis HaMikdash associated with our mitzvos. So to this very day, we take Lulav and Esrog 6 days out of the seven aside from Shabbos. Why? Because that what was done in the Beis HaMikdash. Even though I read the Pasuk, the Pasuk has only obligation on the first day. But we remember that which was done on the Beis HaMikdash. Yochanan ben Zakkai is taking Beis HaMikdash practices outside of the walls of the Beis HaMikdash and building them into our everyday, every Yom Tov Judaic lives. Now, I'm going to skip for just a moment the end of the first paragraph, and we'll go to letter Beis. Watch this. Uminalon di'avdinon zecher l'mikdash. So the Gemara says, from where do you know that you're supposed to do these practices to remember the Beis HaMikdash? So, because he quotes the pasuk from Yirmiyah, because ultimately Tzion is called Nidacha, Tzion is called set aside. Doresh ein la. There is no one seeking her out. Michlal deba'in andrisha. We learn from here that what? That Tzion should be sought out. That you should run after Tzion. So first of all, what's striking about this Gemara? So the Gemara says, how do we know that you're supposed to do Zecher l'Mikdash? So if you were writing the Gemara, what would you have quoted? What would you have quoted? But if you'll notice again, the Gemara does not do that. The Gemara goes for a different pasuk. Furthermore, again, if you'll notice again, there's a difference in terminology between that used in Baba Basra number 9 and in Rosh Hashanah in number 13. In number 13, the practices are called Zecher l'Mikdash. In number 9, they were called Zecher l'Chorban. And here we see something amazing. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai instituted two different sets of practices. There are Zecher L'Churban practices. What's the point of Zecher L'Churban practices? To remember the pain. To remember that which has been lost. To remember tragedy. And remember, I can't point that enough. When we speak about Zecher L'Churban, so understand, are we mourning over a building? Are we mourning over a structure? No. No. Because remember, again, if we wanted to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash tomorrow, could we? Or today, could we? Yeah. Sure. I mean, leaving aside the political realities that are around that. But yeah, you could rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. I mean, we need a paradum, we need a couple of things. There's nothing that stops us from rebuilding a third Beis HaMikdash right now. Jews don't mourn over stones and over bricks, because you can always build buildings. We mourn an ideal. We mourn what the Beis HaMikdash represents. The Beis HaMikdash represented ki beisi beis tefila yikari l'chala amim. It represented a certain amount of universal spiritual equilibrium. It was the damasah, it was the home of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In this world, there was a greater hashras hashchina. There was a greater manifestation of the divine in this world when there was a Beis HaMikdash than when there is not. And it's only because of the absence of that equilibrium that our people has suffered so much over the last 2,000 years. So Zecher L'Churban, those practices are to remind us of the pain. To remind us of the pain. What's Zecher L'Mikdash? So if Zecher L'Mikdash, what's Zecher L'Mikdash? Oh, so Zecher L'Mikdash is to stoke the fires of eager or anticipatory excitement for that which is to come. Zecher L'Mikdash is to make sure that there is a palpable excitement for Klal Yisrael over a bright, magnificent, and beautiful future. So if you look at all the practices of Zecher L'Churban, I'm going to leave the Amma by Amma unfinished on my home. I'm removing, my Kadosh Baruch Hu's home is in a state of disrepair. My home is going to be a little bit in a state of disrepair. I'm not going to put, much to your chagrin, we're not going to use the Kasa D'Harnas. Remember that food item, the Gemara says? The fish hash, which of course is a favorite by everyone. But you can't put it on your table. You can't use it, right? We're going to refrain. We're going to hold back. The world is incomplete. Am Yisrael is incomplete. Even HaKadosh Baruch Hu kiviyachol in his relationship in this world is something missing for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not just for us, but even for HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the kol yachol, he's everything. But for him, his home is missing as well. The Shechina is sharoi b'tzar. So we give that form. But it's not all about mourning. Because this is, remember, this is the incredible koach of the Jew. I simultaneously mourn and have an immeasurable excitement for that which I know is going to come to the future. That's the Zecher L'Mikdash. The Zecher L'Mikdash is keeping temple practices alive in order to stoke within ourselves that fire of eager anticipation, that incredible excitement for what I know is going to come. So the Gemara says, and that's why if you notice again, the Gemara quotes two different psukim. Remember, again, for Zecher L'Churban, it's in Eshkachech Yerushalayim. For Zecher L'Mikdash, you need a different pasuk, ultimately, again, because they are two different sets of practices. So just, by the way, yes?
For Zecher L'Churban, like when Mashiach comes, are we going to do it then?
So it sounds like the answer to that is no. It sounds like once, it's an excellent question.
So
it's an excellent question. So what you're asking is part of a much bigger topic in terms of what we do with 2,000 years of historical pain when Mashiach comes. What do we do with that? So for example, like the Pasuk in Tehillim says, Shiramalos b'shul Hashem Shiva Sion hayinu kecholnim. So the Beis Halevi says something amazing. I mean, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings the Beis Halevi, we're going to be like dreamers. So the Beis Halevi says something amazing. The Beis Halevi says, the Mashiach comes, so you know when you have a dream. So sometimes if you have like a really bad dream, so you feel that it's real. Right? You can even feel pain. If there's pain in the dream, you could literally feel it. And then what happens? You wake up. What happens when you wake up? It's such a simcha. Like, you ever have like a really bad dream? And you wake up and you feel, wow, Baruch Hashem, that was only a dream. You also realize how lucky you are with the life you have after you dreamt about all the different things that could have been. So the Beis Levi actually posits that when Mashiach comes, every single difficulty that we ever experienced is going to be like a dream that we woke up from, and we will never, ever remember it again. To the point that the Beis Levi quotes the Gemara that says, when Mashiach comes, we're going to stop making reference to Yetzias Mitzrayim. Because up until Mashiach, remember again, the greatest salvation of the Jewish people has been Yetzias. Remember, all of that is going to be shelved. It's going to be shelved. No. So apparently, because at least in the Masorah of Chazal, there was always an understanding that the first Beis HaMikdash would be impermanent, second Beis HaMikdash would be impermanent, and the Bayis Shlishi is permanent. They were still referencing these historical things. It's a good question. I don't know how to answer it, but I can tell you that I think it's a debate in terms of what we're going to do with our pain and what, when Bayis Shlishi comes, what we will do with 2,000 or really even 3,000 years of historical ups and downs when Mashiach comes. Because remember, the difference, you know, with Bayis Shlishi, at least this is our emunah, that when Mashiach comes, there's no valley after that, right? Then hopefully that is the end of our collective suffering. What do we do with the past? I don't know. But it would appear that once the Beis HaMikdash comes, third Bayis Shlishi, soon the Zechar L'Churban practices will stop. But I would think that even the Zechar L'Mikdash practices will stop.
Well, that'll be our practice.
Well, no, because remember, Lulav, we would think, would probably go back to what it was. I have enough trouble with the halachas of now. I certainly don't know what's going to be, you know, when the Beis HaMikdash comes. I don't know. Look, there's going to be a new Shulchan Aruch. There's going to be a Shulchan Aruch for Yemos HaMashiach. What we're going to do, we're going to take Lulav all 7 days like we do now. We're going to go back to one day. It's a good kasha. Yes?
Just what was the pasuk for
the Beis HaMikdash? So he quotes the pasuk here. It's in number 13. In number 13. Number 13, paragraph base. Kiela archalach makosech erpoich. The Navi Yirmiyah says, I will heal you from all of your wounds. Kinu'um Hashem kinidocha karulach. They've called you tzion, they've called you set aside. Darash ein la. There's no one who seeks her out. The fact that the Navi admonishes Klal Yisrael for not seeking tzion out tells us that Tzion must be sought out. Michlal Debay Drisha. What does it mean to seek Tzion out? It means to remember Tzion through positive practices. Yes?
So when we had the Beis HaMikdash, wasn't it completely
Ulam? Bayis Sheni.
Even Bayis Rishon?
Correct. Bayis Rishon, see, what they knew during Bayis Rishon about Churban, not Churban, Bayis Shlishi, I don't know. You're already meaning, again, the Bayis Rishon, remember, had all the elements of Geula in it. Did the Chazal have Masorah already that it was going to be destroyed by Hashem? I don't know. I can give you the simple answer. Well, there's no simple answer. In like the Baal Shem Tov's approach to this, which is a general approach in Hasidus, is that, I think we spoke about this in a different context, which is that as a result of the chait of Adam and Chava, so Kiddusha, which was concentrated in Gan Eden, was dispersed. That dispersed Kiddusha, those sparks of Kiddusha are called Nitzotzos. Those Nitzotzos are spread throughout the world. Those Nitzotzos over time become eclipsed by what's called klipos, coverings, different forms of impurity. The job of the Jew is to discover, ultimately, again, the Nitzotzos, the sparks of Kiddusha that are anywhere and everywhere. In order to do that, Galus is a prerequisite. So like B'Torah HaChassidus, we were always going to go into Galus. We had to go into Galus. Because if we just remained in Eretz Yisrael, then ultimately our ability to uncover the pockets of Kiddusha anywhere and everywhere would have never come to be. That's why, again, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Avraditcher brings down that when we went into Eretz Yisrael, when we were about to go into Eretz Yisrael, one of the last things that Moshe Rabbeinu does in Chumash Devarim is, what does he do with the Torah? He writes the Torah. How does he write the Torah? On the stones. What language? Shivim Lashon. So the obvious question is, why is he writing the Torah b'Shivim Lashon? What's the necessity for that? So the Sfarim bring down, Moshe Rabbeinu was giving a very nuanced foreshadow to Klal Yisrael that you're going to be all over. But the beautiful part is, wherever you go, you can have Torah. Wherever you go, you have a relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. So it seems to be, at least in Hasidic thought, that we have to go into Galus because it's the only way we can impact the world and lift up the Nitzotzos. When does Geula come? When we finish our job here. So, you know, but what they knew during Bayis Rishon, during Bayis Sheni, why did Mashiach come during Bayis? That I don't know. Yes, Mrs. Yes,
even during first Beis HaMikdash, there's only such a short period of time that
it
was really everything
was really
true
also.
25 years or so, and that was it, because then came what happened,
and
there's this split of the
Malchios,
and no one's coming up to face
impression. It's very true.
Very little time that it was really in
it. Right. It's also, in general, we happen to have this over-glorified perception as to the way the world was, Right? Not everybody during the times of the Beis Hamikdash was a tzaddik. Not everybody was doing the right thing. And as Rabbi Rosenbaum was pointing out, absolutely, it was a very short honeymoon in Bayis Rishon until things began to descend into chaos. But again, like what the Mesoras Yisrael is for Mashiach, I don't know. There's a reason why the Torah doesn't discuss Mashiach explicitly. Why not? Because the truth is, these types of topics are tied up in so many esoteric ideas and ideologies. Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us to focus on accomplishing in this world. We'll leave the rest of the cheshbonos to Him. But clearly, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai feels that unless we go ahead and we institute Zecher LeChorban, Zecher LeMikdash, we run the risk of forgetting. Now, I want to show you one more incredible thing with this. If you'll notice, go back up to number 13, 13 Aleph for just a moment. If you look at the last phrase in 13 Aleph, there was another enactment that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made, which was V'sheyehe Yom Hanef Kulo Aser. Yom Hanef. Anyone know what Yom Hanef is? Lahanif. Tenufa means what?
Waving.
Excellent. So when was waving done in the Beis HaMikdash? So she was wave. I'm sorry? So Bikurim. Excellent. What was the first Bikurim offering that was brought during the agricultural cycle in the Beis HaMikdash? The first Bikurim offering? So actually, you're not going to think about it because normally when we think about Bikurim, we think about what? Right? Shavuos and Shivas Aminim. But in fact, the first real Bikurim offering was the Karban HaOmer. The Omer is barley, one of the Shivas Aminim, right? Not, we don't bring first fruits per se from barley, but Bikurim, but the Omer offering, which is brought when? When? Second day Pesach, right? Second day Pesach. They harvested it again, Matzah Yom Tov Rishon. So that was the first offering. So Yom Hanef is the day that the Omer was offered. Now, why was the Omer significant from an agricultural perspective? Because remember again, what did the Omer permit? Chadash. So remember again, very quickly, a crash course on Chadash, which I'm sure you know. Any grain, let's just use this year as an example. So it's 5779. So that any grain that has taken root since Pesach 5778, at this point in time, is still called Chadash. So Chadash, the prohibition on Chadash, certainly applies in Eretz Yisrael. Does it apply? Chutz Laaretz is a whole machlokes. What's halacha with Chadash? You cannot partake of the New Year's grain until when? Until the Karban HaOmer is offered. So for example, we can't eat, let's say in Eretz Yisrael, you can't eat grain that was planted after Pesach 5778 until the Omer of 5779 is offered. Now, that works fine when you have a Beis HaMikdash. What happens when there is no Beis HaMikdash? I'm sorry? No Karban HaOmer. So then what happens with Chadash? So on a technical level, the halacha is that in the absence of the Omer, as soon as day breaks on the second day of Pesach, Chadash is permitted. That's the halacha. As soon as the sun comes up on the second day of Pesach, Chadash is automatically permitted. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai comes along and he says, no. In the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, in the absence of the Karban HaOmer, you cannot eat Chadash the entire Yom Hanef. Which means, he holds that you cannot eat Chadash the entire second day of Pesach. When can you begin to eat Chadash? Third day of Pesach, or third night. You know, beginning of the third night of Pesach, you can begin to eat Chadash. Why? So look at this. This is absolutely amazing. Turn to number 13, paragraph Gimel. So watch this. V'shei Yom Hanef Kula Asur. So this is amazing. My timer says Gimel, why? What's the nature of this legislation? Listen to this. Mehira Yibane Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, because Meretz Hashem, the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt speedily. Remember again, one of the major distinctions between Churban Bayis Rishon and Churban Bayis Sheni is what? Remember, Churban Bayis Rishon, we knew the duration. We knew 70 years, we knew the duration. There might have been some miscalculations, but we knew the duration. Churban Bayis Sheni, we don't know. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, now the truth is, they do know. What they don't know the amount of years, but Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai knows deep down, just like Rabbi Akiva knows deep down is what? It's going to be a long time. They know. We see it. We see it already in the way that they're legislating. For Klal Yisrael, the aftermath of the Churban, they know it's going to be a long exile. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says as follows. Mehira yibane beis hamikdash. Halavai the beis hamikdash will be rebuilt speedily in our days. V'yomru. And people will say, Ishtakid milo achalnu beheir mizrach. Achshav nami nechol. V'lo yodi de'ishtakid lo haya omer, heyer mizrachitir, hashta de'ika omer, omer matir. So this is amazing. So the Gemara says that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was afraid of confusion. What's the confusion? He was afraid. Sorry. He was afraid of confusion. The confusion was afraid of as follows. So let's play this out. Let's say last year, we'll call it Pesach 5778, there was no Karban Omer. Okay, so when can you eat Chadash if there's no Karban Omer? Daybreak of the second day. What's going to happen? Mashiach's going to be here, Mir Tzah Hashem, by this coming Pesach. So there's going to be a Beis HaMikdash, there's going to be a Karban Omer. When can you eat Chadash if there's a Karban Omer? Right? After the Karban. When is the Karban brought? So ideally, we try to bring it at the beginning of the day. But technically speaking, it could be brought any time throughout the day. We always try to bring it early, but there could be a variety of different circumstances. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is afraid of confusion. What's the confusion? That what's going to happen this year, Pesach 5779, in the basement, they're just going to be standing. They're going to bring the Karban to Omer, so we're going to only eat Chadash after the Omer is brought. But there might be some segment of the population that are going to begin to eat Chadash when? When? At daybreak. Why? Because that's what they did last year. People sometimes just assume that what I did last year is what I'm going to do this year. Especially, again, if there were many, many, many years prior that I was eating Chadash as of daybreak. So you understand what's happening over here? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is saying, no, we can't eat Chadash the entire second day of Pesach because we're concerned that people are going to get confused in year one of redemption, in year one of Geula, in year one of Mashiach, in year one of Bayis Shlishi. And they're going to end up eating Chadash at daybreak of second day Pesach, because that's what they did last year, without realizing last year you ate at daybreak because there was no Karban. This year you can't eat at daybreak, but rather you have to go ahead and wait for the Karban. So what do you see from this? Not only is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai saying that you have to remember the loss, not only is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai saying that you have to keep the Beis HaMikdash practices alive and well, but what is he actively saying? Achake lo bechol yom sheyavo. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says you have to go through life. You have to go through life eagerly anticipating and awaiting the arrival of the Mashiach, the arrival of the Beis HaMikdash. And look how he prefaces those words. My time in the Gemara says, what does Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai say? You want to know why I say? Mehira Yibane HaMikdash. You have to believe that Yeshua Hashem Kerafayim. So I want to tell you something amazing. Because to a certain degree, if we really believe that Yeshua Hashem Kerafayim, that Mehira Yibane HaMikdash, so then why even spend too much time on Zecha L'Churban? Right, let's just put our focus ultimately again on the rebuilding, on the redemption. So I'll tell you something amazing. We're going to skip to Pesach for just a moment. So what happens by Pesach? By Pesach, we say in Halach Ma'anya, Hashata Avdi L'Shana Ba B'nei Chorin. This year we're free. This year we're slaves. Next year we'll be free. Hashata Hacha, this year we're here. L'Shana Ba B'Ardi Yisrael. Next year we'll be in Eretz Yisrael. What's your obvious question on that statement? What's your not so obvious question on that statement? Think about this just a moment. If you were writing that, how would you write it?
Maybe.
What?
That maybe will be
Mashiach. Okay, maybe. Okay, good. What else?
Why do you say next year?
Why next year? Why next year? Hashata hacha l'machar ba'arad Yisrael. Today I'm here. Anything can happen. Tomorrow I could be in Eretz Yisrael. We believe that. Yeshua Hashem Kerafayim is a fundamental theological underpinning and tenet. We believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could affect change in the blink of an eye. Hashata Avdi, or I should say, Hashta Avdi, now I'm a slave. Now I'm a servant. Now I'm a slave. Right? L'machar b'nei chorin, or L'shah b'nei chorin. What do you mean Hashat future? So today Rav Yisrael Meir Lau has a beautiful, magnificent insight into this. And he says something amazing. He says that the Jew always straddles the line between optimism and realism. You have to be optimistic, but you also have to be realistic. See, sometimes people are optimistic, but their optimism is not rooted in anything real. If your optimism is not rooted in anything real, the optimism becomes delusional. So Rabbi Elazar says something amazing. Hashata Avdi, Right now, I'm a slave. Could I become free in the next moment? Is that possible? Of course it's possible. Is it probable? No. Because the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created his world is that more often than not, change is gradual. Change takes time. You can't necessarily accomplish things or change the world or change yourself in just a moment. Could HaKadosh Baruch Hu do it? Of course he could. But does it happen that way? Most probably not. So we say, Hashata Hacha, Lashana Habba Ba'aradi Yisrael. I can get to Eretz Yisrael tomorrow if I want to. Is it probable? Probably not. Is it possible? Of course. That's why I remember again. We say an imam in Achakilo B'chol Yom Sheyavo. I believe, I have to believe that of course it could happen. But the way change generally unfolds is in a gradual fashion. So why am I sharing Halach Manya with you now? Because look what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is doing. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is trying on one hand to stoke the fires of eager anticipation. But if you stoke them too intensely and make everything about Mehira Yibana HaMikdash, then what happens? What happens? What happens? What happens when optimism is not rooted in realism? It becomes delusional, and over time, people get disenchanted. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, on one hand, says, Mehira Yibana HaMikdash, Zeche LaMikdash, Yeshua will come, Geula will come, things will change. This is not our plight forever. But at the same time, he, at the same exact moment, legislates what? Zecher l'churban. What do the Zecher l'churban practices tell us? What do they tell us? What do they tell us? We're in Avelus. We're in Avelus. And we must accept our reality that life is not as we want it. The circumstances are not perfect. You know what happens when you go ahead and you leave an amma by amma in your house unfinished? That's a commitment. That's a commitment. That's leaving a piece of your home in a changed state. I'm recognizing that right now my life is in a certain state, and chances are it may be that way for a little while longer. And it's my job to optimize my circumstances. It is my job to try to become the best person I can be, to build the best life that I can in the circumstances that I have. I can't be all about Mehiri Yibana HaMikdash, because that future may come now, and that future may come in 100 years from now. And if I'm just all about Mehiri Yibana HaMikdash and not about accepting, embracing, and optimizing my current circumstances, I don't lead a meaningful and impactful life. This was the gadlus of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So remember when we started this Mishnah a while ago, and I told you that we owe a lot of who we are in North Yard's with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? It's because of this. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai did something absolutely amazing. He taught us how to mourn, accept compromised circumstances, but yet not live a life of aninos. Live a life of avelus, accept that which has been lost, while at the same time constantly stoke the fires of optimistic hope for something that will be beautiful and magnificent. But not to lose ourselves in that optimism for the future at the expense of building our present. This was the gadlus of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Zecher l'mikdash, zecher l'churban, mehera yibana hamikdash, all bundled into contemporary Jewish practice. Mourn what you have lost, accept the compromised circumstances of our national existence, optimize it, do the best that you can in the life that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you, and at the same time, close your eyes and find the ability to imagine the beautiful future that awaits us all. All right, we'll stop over here for today. But let me actually continue. We have a few more takanas of Yochanan ben Zakkai, and then we have to, Emirat Hashem, loop it back to the Mishnah. Yes.
Is it okay? Do we have to write the whole background of religion?